This podcast is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability, criminal prosecution, and the wrath of the tall man.
Boy!
Hey, let's talk about you. The ID10T community events at ID10T.com, like Russ Stevens, a.k.a. Cool Movies Darth, who has started a podcast called 90 for Chill, which Russ says is dedicated to movies with a runtime between 74 and 99 minutes, the time frame that I feel is ideal. Russ, I could not agree with you more. That is a fantastic idea. Russ goes on to say, there are times you need a cinematic fix but don't have time for the latest Scorsese masterpiece or offering from a comic book universe. There's also times when you know you need a conclusion to prevent a binge costing you a whole night. My guests and I try to follow these guidelines as we chat up features that are definitely worth your time and are beyond easy to make time for. 90 for Chill, the podcast, can be found on all major podcast platforms at 94chill.com, and that's spelling out 90, N-I-N-E-T-Y, 4-F-O-R, chill. So there you go. Thank you so much for sharing, Russ. Really great idea for a podcast. Events at ID10T.com for everyone else.
Previously on 90 for Chill, the podcast.
Pretty dog. What's his name?
JB.
As in James Bond?
No.
Jason Bourne?
No. Jack Bauer?
Oh, bravo. It pains me to admit it, Eggsy, but I think that one day you might be as good a spy as any of them. Take it. Shoot the dog.
This weapon is live. Shoot the dog.
Girl's got balls.
Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
Bring the noise.
And thank you for coming back to 90 for Chill, the podcast. This is your host, Cool Movies Darth, is the handle that I'm trying to get over. If you want to know what I'm watching, go to letterboxd.com/cmdarth. Otherwise, just call me Russ Stevens, and the Twitter that I tend to use most is @catbusruss. Which is kind of ironic that I'm doing a podcast about dogs this week. Actually, I was supposed to interview the host of the Tattoo Squid podcast. It's an excellent character study in people who just like to focus on their nerdum, be it horror movies. He had a medium on the prior week. Good conversation to be heard. I tried to go and pull off some letterbox stalking on my big sister, the poetic critic. That's the poetic critic on Litterbox. I think I may have said Litterbox there. It just didn't really get, I think, a lot of potency in the conversation, or it just gets redundant after having her on the previous week. There's some good stuff there, and I might use that as a bonus episode to drop. I guess it just wasn't what I did to try watch to prepare for it. To try to get her opinions upon, she wasn't quite as passionate about. She's not really an action movie person, and the film that I saw that drew my eye, which qualifies for 90 for Chill, the podcast rules, being 75 to 99 minutes long, was Mad Max 2 The Road Warrior. And I ran a bunch of just ideas past her. Nothing was really hitting. I did bring up the fact that, you know, a lot of good movies kill the dog. Spoiler alert, in The Road Warrior, the only canine in the feature just gets shot without mercy. You take away you finally bring a human attachment to the character, which is what killing the dog is supposed to do, I suppose. I mean, it's worked since Walt Disney had Old Yeller put down. You look at movies like Reanimator, which was a cat that gets killed in Reanimator, but in the sequel, they spread it around, and it just shows you that, you know, it's not Student Gordon's film, but we're going to go in, mess with your brain as best as Brian Usna can, who's, you know, got some good production credits. He did produce the first Reanimator. Beneath Still Waters was the only movie that comes to immediate mind that I've seen of his, which had a lot of potential, but it really comes across as like a Charles Band movie. Other thoughts about Dead Dogs, you get John Wayne, and like Mad Max, the dog doesn't have a name, it's just Dog. I think a part of us is always fearing, or we're always pulling for the dog. He's man's best friend. He's the one person that should get out of it. But could you imagine how much better, how much more emotion we could get out of Independence Day? It may not be the rivable movie that it is now if that dog would have just been consumed by that fireball. Or maybe I'm living with cats way too much and I'm just like, yeah. I mean, we don't talk about roasted cats much, but hey, it's a delicacy in Eastern Asia, at least to the point where it was a concern of the World Cup back in 2002 in Seoul about, really, are we going to let tourists come and question the menu? You know, I'm thinking about movies where killing a dog may have made it better, you know. I couldn't really get behind Alex in Flashdance. She's very selfish about her getting a break. And she still maintained that selfish attitude after her mentor dies. You know, by that point, let's knock some sense into her. Let's kill the dog. You know, if we have to kill the aunt in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Maybe Stuart Gordon has an affinity for dogs. I haven't seen one die in one of his movies yet. Not cool with the cats. Definitely not cool with the cats. So Castle Freak's another one where the cat gets to show, oh yeah, there's real trouble here. But cats, at least, they tend to get their vengeance. I mean, that's what Sleepwalkers, the Stephen King movie best-selling point, I guess, is the cats are suspecting or trying to stop these vampire type creatures. I mean, the best selling point is, you know, seeing a ear of corn shoved into a police officer's back as a fatality. You just don't get that kind of craziness in Stephen King. Best thing you get is Maximum Overdrive, and yeah, it doesn't really. So I'm not really speaking too highly of Sleepwalkers when I stop and think about it, just because. But hey, Cujo gets it, as far as I know. It's difficult for me dealing with movies with animals that are vicious, I suppose, because, you know, people, those are pretty easy to predict. An animal, they only have two modes, and if you guess wrong, you're dog meat. Now, no, it's not going to work for all movies. I was just transcribing a review for the movie Teenagers from Outer Space from 1959, a movie that Warner Brothers let go into the public domain. It's a good thing that I pretty much wrote that review at that time, because when I saw it as the second half of a drunken zombie double feature, I was way too plastered to remember it without it being documented. But you know, they kill a dog off the bat, doesn't help that movie. I mean, that movie can't be helped, I suppose. I mean, giant lobsters, still so painful that I had to drink to forget it. I believe it was on Mystery Science Theater 3000. I guess I gotta go and conclude this if we're going for the YouTube algorithm. And let me just bring up another Will Smith movie. I have not seen I Am Legend, but we all know about the dog pretty much being the only humanity left in the Will Smith character. You know what? If that doesn't happen, that death doesn't happen, you don't have a third act. I don't like to say John Wayne set a good example, but when in doubt, kill the dog. So, as I say, I'm just rambling on this episode, and it's going to be tough to try getting guests to come back after this one, especially since, you know, suggesting dog death is definitely going to offend probably Jessica Quaz from Second Chance Movies. It's probably going to, well, Allie from Allie's Accessory Shop on Etsy, she's knows my sense of humor well enough that she'll let it slide. Next week, I'm looking for a guest. So if you want to be on the show, just shoot me an email. The address is rustthebus07@gmail.com. That's RUSSTHEBUS07@gmail.com. Or again, you can follow me on Twitter. That is @CatBusRuss. That's @CatBusRuss. Send me a DM if you don't like the podcast. And I can imagine there will probably be some people who don't like this one. I prefer to get all my hate sent there. Otherwise, you want to help me out, give me those subscriptions and 5-star reviews. So, as it goes for getting on the show, just got to come up with a theme, a movie, a director, or an actor. Focus on sub-100-minute material, and we'll create some podcast gold. Thanks again for coming to 90 for Chill, the podcast. Have yourselves a good day, good week. And hug those little fur balls.
Look.
How many?
John Wick just killed 8 more of my men. Here's some advice. Whatever you do, do not cross John Wick. Do not touch his dog. Do not steal his car. Do not borrow his phone charger. This man takes revenge seriously. And he's just getting started.
Do not cross John Wick.
90 for Chill, the podcast, proudly presents to you Allie's Accessories Shop on Etsy's Trash Feature Review.
We're throwing a kick-ass New Year's party here tonight.
So what happened with you and Dan?
We broke up. People posting comments, judging me on the social red room.
Various student suicides and physical attacks in Burbank, Washington have now been reported.
Riot in Los Angeles takes the lives of 27.
The world isn't ending, Jed. The media hypes these events.
He's infected.
Okay, guys, honestly.
Something bad is gonna happen.
What you were about to see is causing these hallucinations.
You have to figure out what to do. You can't stay here.
Frank, no!
How else could a virus spread worldwide in a day?
What am I supposed to do, Dad?
I couldn't stop.
So, I've just concluded watching Antisocial, a present from Anime Alley, just to give me content for 90forchill.com. It is a Canadian take on the Night of the Living Dead premise, but instead of radiation or nukes, they decided to go with social media. It's competently directed enough for such a low-budget feature, but nothing interesting about the characters. And building towards the realization that it's essentially Facebook that's caused the zombie apocalypse doesn't quite work, I think, because there's not much fending off people from the outside. With Night of the Living Dead, you at least had that threat, despite, yeah, we all know the enemy's inside the house. It tries to incorporate some CG, which I do not suggest in a feature of this budget, regardless of your Canadian tax credit, and just misses the mark. And spoiler is on the box, so could have been better. It definitely could have been worse. Good concept to work with, and if you're looking to get into the filmmaking, maybe you can co-opt the idea of antisocial.
Now available on video cassette.
We need help. Can anyone hear us, please?
It really is the end of the world.
I'm gonna put an end to this.
Resident Evil Extinction.
So, after watching about 6 episodes from the first season of Game of Thrones, I was kind of in an Ian Glenn mood, I guess. I remember now, this episode was supposed to drop last week, and I was trying to find a transition to make it all make a little more sense when I finally get into the conversation with the Poetic Critic. So I watched Russell Mulcahy's Resident Evil Extinction, the third in the original Resident Evil franchise, and when I stopped and thought about things, well, that movie comes out on Wednesday, I believe, that movie being Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City. So I figure, you know, might as well talk about that. If I'm going to talk about a Resident Evil movie, why don't we try to associate with the one that's about to be released? You know what? At least I know with Russell Mulcahy that now I can actually do a Highlander podcast if anybody is interested. I've seen about everything, so you don't have to bring Highlander the Source or Highlander the Final Dimension. And I don't suspect a lot of people have seen The Quest for Vengeance, the anime from the director of A Wicked City and Ninja Scroll. When it comes to Resident Evil 3, it was kind of a, you know, it ends very well. Like, I think Paul W.S. Anderson knew if this movie didn't open number one, he wasn't going to get his 4, 5, and 6. So he goes and gives us a very tempting closing when Brute leads into Resident Evil Afterlife, I believe. I think it's Afterlife, not Apocalypse. Or, see, it's just, the naming just got way out of control. So Apocalypse was number 2, so I think it's Afterlife. It closes well. You know, I can't really say it opens well, because knowing that this might be his final film in the franchise, Anderson pretty much just skips the fact that the world is not totally ending in the video game franchise. This is where he's totally stepped away. He kind of gets back in 4 and 5, and then totally blows it on final chapter. Not saying final chapter is unwatchable, it's just nothing memorable, really. I mean, they do bring Ian Glenn back. Sorry if I spoiled Ian Glenn in this film, then, with that said. I brought up the Russ McCoy, Mulcahy with my older sister, the Poetic Critic. That's the Poetic Critic on Letterboxd, because I was trying to get some kind of conversation out of her in regards to what I was seeing she was watching on Letterboxd, Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior being one of those pictures. And she does eventually talk about the Australian New Wave, and I was able to do that by saying, you know, I think Extinction might be Russell McKay's only attempt at creating Mad Max. Like, I think he was really just trying to ride on George Miller's coattails. Sorry, but now I'm just thinking George Miller Highlander, which be a totally different movie. And I think at least with the Highlander movie, McKay was able to not really have any grand set pieces that his music video direction, like Hungry Like the Wolf, is probably his most memorable video he did, Duran Duran, the jump cutting and such. He just doesn't know how to look at the same thing from a different angle, say from a different character perspective. No, he just has to jump and show you this thing. It doesn't look like it's even being managed by a character. It looks like he's basically, he could be a great replacement for Kevin Dunn in WWE with all those jumps. Let me get my notes out to further discuss Resident Evil Extinction. In a sense, it is a sanitized version of Day of the Dead. If you want to see what the premise is, basically the world is gone. It is nothing but zombies and survivors living underground, if they're lucky enough to. That would be the Umbrella Corporation. Otherwise, you're just moving from town to town, scavenging. Again, very much a Mad Max type vibe. I think I got this done in a lot sooner than I thought. I will say I wasn't initially a fan of Resident Evil Extinction. I saw it with my ex-girlfriend from that time in theaters. The first Resident Evil movie I saw in theaters. I've only seen two, and that would be Resident Evil Afterlife. And yeah, I wasn't really overly impressed. The moment I saw Russell McKay's name on it, and then it's like, oh great, desert. Ugh, jeesh. We know how that worked in Highlander 2, The Quickening. It kind of was a turnoff, and it took me a while to come around to this movie. I'm just a completist. It's not awful by any stretch of the imagination, but the script seems like it was written from somebody in my sophomore creative writing course that I took, and I had the wisdom to drop the F out of it. As I say, I think it was meant as a conclusion, possibly a conclusion, with a tease at the end. So if we didn't get a fourth movie, Paul W.S. Anderson can blame the people for not coming out of it. It's your fault that Resident Evil is dead, in his opinion. Well, fortunately, Sony still got the rights, and it looks like it's just undead, and we're going to get Welcome to Raccoon City this week. I think I've spoken my piece on this. Let's move on to the wisdom of the poetic critic.
In the future, cities will become deserts. Roads will become battlefields. And the hope of mankind will appear as a stranger. The Road Warrior.
Now playing at selected Toronto theaters. Consult your listings.
I don't know how much content I'll have this week, so just shooting the breeze with the big sis. I imagine with her work hours, she might be going to bed earlier, or I just totally out of the loop there. So she's been catching up on some stuff as of Letterboxd. She's finally gotten around the Manhunter, which I don't, it's not better than Silence of the Lambs. There's just so much charm to Silence of the Lambs, I think. I mean, and so much memorable stuff. Like, who does, that's a meme I just put up there today, was Snow White over the well and put the lotion in the basket is just some text next to it. And it's really still early Michael Mann anyhow, so I would say it's still relatively early Michael Mann. You get a lot of his tropes and such. Like, I love the finale within, and I got in the God of DeVita, but any other thoughts about Manhunter? Do you prefer Brian Cox or Anthony Hopkins? Because I think there's a strong case for Brian Cox.
He's very good, but I wouldn't be in the mood to make a decision on that.
Mm.
I haven't thought about it that much to have anything to say.
Okay. Do you think Anthony Hopkins can sell McDonald's, though? I mean, I'm sure you've seen the commercials, you know, with Brian Cox doing the voiceover. If you are going to go to McDonald's and ask a friend if they want fries and they say no, get them the fries. Otherwise, your fries will become their fries.
I try to avoid commercials as much as I can these days.
Oh, yeah, your special Criterion collection. Like, ah. Like, I don't know. I might, well, if I didn't just get the HBO Max year package for that discount, I would say, well, guess what? I'm going to take off that. I'm going to save $5 a month just to torment you. Get all them commercials. I don't know. With streaming services, I would like to, because I am releasing a blog this week about, yes, AEW is the wrestling you should be watching, but it is more expensive than WWE because you got to buy each pay-per-view for $50 a pop. In WWE, you get free pay-per-views provided you have Peacock. So, you know, half the country gets it free. But I would really like that, you know, the Turner Network and HBO Max give me like an AEW wrestling channel on HBO Max.
I didn't realize they did that.
They don't. That's what I'm saying. It's like, oh yeah, no, we have to put all the purple banners on the debut week of HBO Max around Jacksonville's Daily Place for the advertisement, the synergy. But, and like, when are wrestlers going to show up on Rick and Morty? Rick and Morty showed up on the wrestling show. Just shooting some breeze, but otherwise doing with my further letterbox stalking. I came across her information on Mad Max 2 The Road Warrior. Which, I mean, if you've seen, I don't know, I was kind of thinking that it was going to equal Fury Road, but I don't think it, I mean, it's definitely not, I think, the defining feature that Fury Road was.
Well, I couldn't say. It's the only one I've seen so far.
Well, I mean, I'm sure we've...
It was there, and I've been trying to work my way through more 80s movies. Mm-hmm. And...
Okay, well, just some observations I had, and I guess I'm at least free to grab my cell phone in this event to look over my notes. Deep pockets in these jeans. Alrighty. No, I'm not going to go and check out that Cole's email. Okay. Alright, the Road Warrior notes. Well, one thing I noticed, and it's because I have seen the most recent of the Mad Max franchise, the steering wheels in the Road Warrior are on the right side of the vehicle. Somehow, I guess, really, I don't know what they're going to do in the future of that franchise without Immortan Joe, because all the steering wheels were moved to the left side for that feature. I mean, just one of those little things that could annoy the piss out of somebody. Other observations, some of the editing really seems like, well, it worked in on Benny Hill. Sometimes the vehicles just move way too fast, you know, the... Okay, we got to get to this point quicker. Like, it's a movie about car chases. I don't think you need to rush any of the footage. Let's see. I do have to come to the conclusion, though. Good movies kill the dog. I mean, Old Yeller. Every John Wayne movie. John Wick. And hey, John Wick is still, the first film is still the premier John Wick film. So let's kill that pit bull. And just to frustrate my, well, no, I won't. Well, I've already brought up the thought with Flashdance. Maybe if we killed the dog, it would have been more watchable. Flashdance, though, I guess, because I did see that in your letterbox diary. And I think we both agree that it is utter garbage.
Well,
I mean, there's some great music video type stuff being shot in it.
The problem is that it feels like they didn't finish writing the script before they shot it.
No,
it
feels
like the first draft done.
It feels more like Giorgio, Giorgio
Moroder,
thank you, did more effort in writing the theme song.
Mm-hmm.
Which, no, like, he's talking about, oh yeah, this is a, well, basically all the songs that are about, involve Pittsburgh. Like, how many times has he actually been to Pittsburgh? So I'm impressed by that kind of research.
But yeah, I ripped through it on. And I'm sorry, Allie from Allie's Accessory Shop on Etsy, who does so much for the show. It's a joke about dead pit bulls dying after you put yours down. She was a good dog. But yeah, you know, she knows my morbid sense of humor enough, anyhow. So here's something, though, about Mad Max. It's like, I thought with some of the appearances of the characters, obviously, I mean, it's hell bent for leather, but I see a lot of Highlander 2 in some of the choices. I know this is not Highlander 2, obviously came second, but was Russell McCauley just Russell McKay? See, I do learn about my pronunciations. Was he just out to make a Highlander movie and he eventually made, not a Highlander, a Road Warrior movie? He eventually kind of made it with Resident Evil Extinction. I know you haven't seen Resident Evil Extinction. I know you've seen Highlander 2 in some form. Especially the screaming characters and the Australian connection. I don't know. With George Miller, I only really think about the Mad Max and Happy Feet, which kind of makes me think this is kind of music video stuff, and that's where Russell McKay made all his bones and such. So, any thoughts on that? Or is this just like, I don't know. I also listened to the Screen Drafts Australian 21st Century Draft, which is pretty interesting. A lot of options.
Well, if you're wondering about the earlier aesthetic, have you ever seen the documentary Not Quite Hollywood?
No, I have not.
That is a film about the Australian exploitation industry and its development in the 1970s and going through the 80s before it became... Because the Australian New Wave is well known.
Yes.
It developed roughly... The Australian film industry basically flowered in the 1970s.
Right.
But they had a really thriving exploitation industry. This is what that film's about.
Well, you can definitely see that.
It's from the same guy who... I think it's the same guy who went on to do Electric Boogaloo, the documentary about Cannon films. And it's not... I didn't like it as much as I did Electric Boogaloo.
Well,
but it's very good.
It's also subject matter. Everything Cannon did essentially was bad in some way. Like, they really knew how to polish a bunch of turds, but there's no way you were going to buy a Cannon feature idea without a bunch of Connie being conned in some way or another. I mean, that explains the difficulty Cobra gets, like Globus and
Golan.
Golan, thanks. Get the producers credit on Cobra, but they don't get the put their label on it.
No, they did.
No, that's not a Canon feature.
No, it was as Canon as anybody's. They simply had the distribution deal with Warner Brothers by that point.
Okay, so
it's as nakedly Canon movie as any of the others. They included it in the Canon box set Warner Brothers put out.
Well, Warner Brothers put that one out. I mean, in that Canon box set, how much of the MGM stuff that got claimed was in it?
I don't know if they had any of the MGM titles, but they did have... I think they did have Delta Force in there.
Alright, that's an MGM one, yeah. So, you get there's a channel on Xfinity, Screen Picks, which is pretty much like, and this is for everything that will not touch streaming services. Just because, I don't know. I don't even know why we have movie channels on cable anymore, in all honesty.
Well, not everyone has cut the cord yet.
Yeah, but when you look at HBO, it's all based around series for the most part. I don't even know what movies end up on Showtime anymore. But no, it's good to know that it's an Australian New Wave thing. It's glad to know that there's a documentary about it. I really want to watch the documentary that was talked about on 80s All Over about Mad Max 2, about the stunts and stuff. And then, like, and obviously something went wrong. That's in the freaking movie! Like, I can tell which spot they were saying. I haven't even watched the documentary. I mean, it's... I don't know. It's like, I would really suggest watching Fury Road.
Right.
I mean, we don't have to watch Thunderdome, but who doesn't want to deal with me not realizing David Bowie in the wig wasn't Tina Turner until he finally spoke dialogue in Labyrinth? Goblin King, what are they doing here? I don't get it. Never mind, I was kind of hiding my eyes because I still had a problem with Gremlins at the time. First time we saw Labyrinth in the theater in 1988, I believe.
Yeah, it was Christmas 88.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, geez, no, little creatures, no, no. Cover my eyes. Did he say it yet? Okay, I guess these guys are cute. And then, as I said in the Commando podcast that didn't make it on, only a half hour got caught. Who knows, Zoom might be finally cracking down. But yeah, great. David Bowie in a wig and codpiece. And yeah, I'm probably not there's no way I'm a zero on the Kinsey scale. So yeah, that's, otherwise for me, I did watch a bunch of movies mentioned on the Tattoo Squid podcast, which is a fun little podcast, just a good character study of people. I haven't really seen it go into too many themes yet. But they were talking about talking to a guest from the Wheel of Horror podcast, bringing up a lot of stuff, not really much that qualifies her 90 for Jill, except they did talk about the movie Jolt, which isn't a horror movie. It's basically a culmination of, oh, yeah, we can't really make an underworld movie, but we have Kate Beckinsale, so we're going to have the same kind of action, but we're going to shoot it like a Resident... This may have been what Sony was gunning for with Resident Evil and Underworld. We're going to combine these two universes somehow. It's not that. And makes me wonder why Kate Beckinsale can just be the only person with an English accent in a movie. Doug Bradley, David Bradley's in it. Doesn't get enough David Bradley. That is one cool old Brit. But Jai Courtney's in it, and we know he's an Australian, and they kind of mocked him on the Screen Drafts Australian draft. Like, yeah, we don't really count Sam Worthington and Jai Courtney anymore. So, I mean, it's fun, but it's basically Kate Beckinsale has to shock herself all the time to avoid letting her anger take over. I mean, Stanley Tucci's in it. I mean, it's got a hell of a cast. It's just like, we could have done so much more with this. So, Bobby Cavanaugh, and the other one was a Hulu, I think part of a horror anthology series. It's a full-length feature called Tentacles, and nope, it's not going to fly with an anime fan. The lack of tentacles. Or even for a Lovecraftian fan. No, we need more of this stuff. Not just the occasional wet willy, which is pretty much how the movie operates around.
Well, you bring up horror movies, and we are going into spooky season.
Yes, I'm planning on trying to do a month centered around horror.
I'm thinking about doing like horror or at least like monster movies. Old Godzilla films, stuff like that.
Right.
But I'm also, and I'm noticing, that's become a big deal. You know, even Freeform has their 31 Days of Halloween.
Yeah, no. How many of this is like fresh from the Disney Channel?
It's not all from the Disney
Channel. I'm just saying.
But yeah,
for every really creepy thing,
there seem to be a lot of complaints that this year they're showing Hocus Pocus 10 times.
Oh, bollocks!
And you know they don't have as many, you know, Tim Burton or the kind of Tim Burton light films we had in the '90s as often. Aside from the Addams Family films and the Casper movie from 95. That's about all.
So was Christina Ricci supposed to be like our scream queen for Generation Z? Not Generation Z, the millennials?
I don't know. I haven't paid that close attention.
Well, I'm just saying that, okay, she's in these teenage, you know, hip movies with scary elements, but that aren't really scary. You know, that's what I'm suggesting. It's like, oh yeah, we're going to get further creepy, and I guess we kind of got that with Sleepy Hollow, which is a pretty missable film. Have you seen Sleepy Hollow?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Like, I don't know, the best thing I got out of it was Alfred from, sadly I can't recall that actor's name. And we're at a creepy stage when, like, do we really... Was it Geoffrey Jones from Beetlejuice, or...
Yeah, Geoffrey Jones.
Yeah, we were still in that creepy stage with Geoffrey Jones, I think, at that time. It's just a lot of stuff that doesn't work, except Christopher Walken. So I guess you kind of get it rewarded if we could only had, like, the mannerisms with the horsemen of Christopher Walken, like, as you see Christopher Walken, like, doing, you know, emphasizing everything somehow. It's not in his voice, which I think was kind of lacking in Of You to a Kill, now that we look at it. He wasn't Christopher Walken enough. I know that role is written for David Bowie, but...
There's an episode of... One of the bonus episodes of 80s All Over has Drew and Scott discussing that movie and the approach to his performance. And if you catch that one, I think it's one of the viewer mailbag episodes.
I'm just not in that luxurious place where I can do a bunch of Patreon episodes.
Look, if you do a little research on it, you'll find out why Walken's performance is the way it was.
Huh, okay.
If you do a little research, but I'm not going to spoil it for you.
So we're promoting other people's Patreons? Hi.
You can look it up elsewhere. And remember, the 80s All Over bonus stuff is now up on regular Apple. They posted it up some time ago, so they're all available.
Well, it's not like I'm following the podcast feed of 80s All Over, since Colt Cabana at least promises to be back every 6 months with a live Art of Wrestling.
I am following Drew McQueen's Patreon, Last 80s Book You'll Ever
Read.
And that's been terrific so far.
All right.
Because he's basically starting from the beginning with these write-ups on movies. He's catching up on a lot of stuff that the first time around they kind of misplaced or simply didn't catch the first time. So there's a lot of new material along with stuff that had been covered on the show, but now it's from the solo angle.
Do we know what Scott Weinberg's doing recently? Or
Scott's been doing his own podcast on Patreon called Overhated, where they take on movies with famously bad reputations.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty, I think.
I haven't subscribed to that yet, but I know he's been updating it pretty frequently. He has guests on.
Okay.
They've been tackling a lot of the famous bad movie titles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I kind of get that with Second Chance movies with Jessica Kwas and Joe Harper, which... needing to add some content, I did put up, like, no. I think Tropic Thunder totally works now as it did back in 2008. I think if you basically dare the audience to be offended, I think that puts you in a good place as long as everything is structurally sound. Mm-hmm. I mean, the only thing you could really fault, I think, about Tropic Thunder is that it does the pacing kind of sucks in the second act, just jumping back and forth, but, you know, being bankrupted by junkies, I totally appreciate the Jack Black performance, and I think the Robert Downey Jr. performance kind of helps tell us why we need people of certain demographics to play people of certain demographics. You know, I think the entire point of doing that was basically the entire point of having a Hollywood actor playing an Australian actor playing a black guy in a movie. Just the sheer ridiculousness of it kind of makes, you know, it just reminds me of Putney Swope. Like, I'm gonna go and do something to offend you, but I'm gonna do it so it's structurally sound, right, writing wise. And yeah, I dare you to hate it. And that's far more abrasive than anything from Tropic Thunder, I think. But something I missed about the IFC Films Unlimited was I didn't get around to the Trip series. It says, we really need to give Steve Coogan more love, I think. If anything, that is a suggestion. Watch In the Thick of... No, it's In the Loop, right? The Thick of It, it's a series.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, the entire concept of Doctor Who squaring off with Tony Soprano, I think sells the film right there. And, yeah, I think, as I say, I was just trying to fill it. I've got 25 minutes on the timer. So, any movies you're really looking forward to in your October monster hunting?
I haven't.
Does Monster Hunter make it?
No.
Oh, Mila Jovovich, I just reorganized 90 for Chill, the podcast, the website or the blog, what have you. 90forchill.com. And it's like, okay, what's common themes? Podcast. Zombies. Vampires. Anime. Animated. Cyborg. The canon feature. Mia Jovovich. So it's... she's her own category. It's just a whole bunch of weird. But I digress about that. So, again, monsters...
I haven't finalized anything yet, so I'm kind of playing it by ear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so much that's easy. With horror, you know, it's easy to find anywhere.
Right.
Something.
Yeah.
So you kind of play it by ear, and that's easier than anything. But I am kind of
curious. Are you interested in the inanimate objects from this meta-horror period we're going through, like slacks or rubber?
No, I haven't really taken interest in that.
Okay. I haven't watched either of those either, but it's still the fact that we have a movie about a killer tire and a killer pair of pants. If you could make something killer, what would you make killer?
I don't know.
Something mundane that can't kill. I don't know. I think we take everything for granted. And I think everything is out. Now that makes me think everything's out to kill us. Yeah, we're just waiting for you to drop a guard. Fleshlight. I'm sure I can get that movie made. So, if you want to discuss the work on a killer fleshlight, send your emails to rustthebus07@gmail.com. That's rustthebus07@gmail.com. The coolest thing is, like, I was gonna, like, thinking, oh, I'll do more YouTube videos. Well, I need a green screen. No, I'll just buy some green queen-size sheets. So, have some weird effects. So we can either go porno or we could go straight comedy, horror comedy. So, trying to think of stuff around here. When Funko is desperate for money, which isn't too far removed now, since, as you pointed out from Jessica Ritchie, I think it was, that the U.S.
commenting on it, right? But yeah, Funko is doing U.S. Marine Corps Funko Pops.
Just the Marine Corps? You didn't get any other license? Army, Navy, Space Force?
I don't think so.
Are you surprised at me that they're doing recruitment ads now for Space Force?
I haven't been paying attention.
Well, yeah, and I think that's how we got in this situation about the need for a Space Force. Okay. I know it'd be difficult licensing fee-wise, so we'd have to go knockoffs, so we might just have to go generic Hummels. But I'm looking around the room, and I see your Disney precious moments. So would you go telepathic precious moments, or just little killing things?
I don't think either works, because they're ceramic.
That's why I'm saying you go with the telepathic, like the tire. Like the tire doesn't run over people. I know that much. It just thinks about blowing people's heads up. You have a little battle between the ones that haven't been corrupted, like a Jesus precious moment versus an Ursula precious moment. And then we can even bring in, like, we got Lovecraftian vibes there with Ursula. Like, So, I guess one last thing, just again, from observing the environment, we've got your Nightmare Before Christmas top. I really think I need to watch it. I get it, but somehow I think it's overrated. A lot of people say it's the fans that have ruined A Nightmare for Christmas, Before Christmas, for just the layman. I mean, does it still hold up, your opinion?
I haven't watched it in a while.
Okay. Because there's no reason it shouldn't hold up.
I don't think there's any reason it wouldn't.
No, I think a lot of it is not that we're afraid of nerds. We're just afraid of people overblowing something or starting to act like nerds. Mm-hmm. Be a straight up nerd. Don't be some, I'm hip, you know. I'm hip. I understand you now. This is how we get Dear Evan Hansen stuff. Oh, no. I know how to relate to you. Yay. You want to offer any Dear Evan Hansen bashing
for the pod?
No.
I don't think I can add it. I'm not interested in seeing it, and I have nothing to add that hasn't already been expressed online.
So, I guess from what you've gotten off online, would Evan Hansen be the not the Giallo killer in a Giallo movie? As you said, the creepy Giallo, the creepy person is never the killer in a Giallo movie.
Yeah, that was Jessica's comment. I don't know enough to make a definitive statement one way or the other.
Ever watch much Giallo or any?
I've only watched one or two.
Okay. Argento stuff or Fulci or?
I'd seen some Bava.
Oh, yeah, which is a classic. For the genre, I don't know how you really feel about it.
I thought it was fine. Mm. It didn't make a huge impression on me, but I see why people love it.
Yes. No, that's fair. Because, no, it's not. My life isn't any worse off for seeing it or not. So, cool. All right. So, do you think Giallo gets mixed up with just Italian horror in general? Because Argento kind of really blurred those lines at the end. And even Bava, you know, Planet of the Vampires and all that stuff.
I don't know.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, we did tackle a bunch of stuff on her letterbox, Manhunter, and more importantly, Mad Max Fury Road. Man, there are weird memes out there. You're looking for, as I say, if you're looking for somebody that guides you into the land of cinema, The Poetic Critic is a great follow on Letterboxd. I'm on Letterboxd as well. That's CM Darth is my member name. And Otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter. That's at CatBusRuss, at CatBusRuss. And thank you very much, The Poetic Critic, for filling in this little void of a podcast.
You're welcome.
All right. And the applause button. That was the rim shot button.
Can I hear a wahoo?
I never thought I'd have an episode where I'd be considering getting the license to a Ogden Edsel classic, Dead Puppies Aren't Much Fun.
Long live Flash! You've saved your earth. Have a nice day.